Perfect. Thank you so much. It is 2 p.m. and I would like to call the meeting of the Application Review Committee to order. Today's date is October 28th, 2024. The purpose of this meeting is to substantially review the psychologist applications listed on our agenda for today. Kathy, would you please do roll call?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Flint?
Present.
Dr. Seideman?
Present.
You have a quorum.
Thank you, Kathy. We are going to move to item number 3 on our agenda. That includes discussion, consideration, and possible action, on psychology applications. And this section is the request for approval to sit for the ECCC only. Dr. Seideman, if you wouldn't mind starting, and maybe we'll just bounce back and forth throughout. Is that an okay process for you?
That sounds fantastic, Dr. Flint.
Thank you. Go ahead and start whenever you're ready.
So the first applicant is Dr. Brandon Lipin. And Dr. Lipin graduated from the APA-accredited Doctor of Psychology and Clinical Psychology program at Adler University on August 8th of 2023. Dr. Lipin submitted 2,000 hours of pre-doctoral internship at the APA-accredited Centerstone Consortium, which is part of All Care Medical Centers. On May 3rd of 2024, the board had approved Dr. Lipin's initial application, and unfortunately, Dr. Lipin did not obtain the required passing scale score in Arizona, having taken the exam on August 21st of 2024. Dr. Lipin submitted a new National Practitioner Databank self-query, which was processed on August 23rd of 2024, which had no reports. Dr. Lipin's responses to the declarations questions revealed no concerns, and references appear to still be in order. I have no concerns with this application, Dr. Flint. Do you have any concerns?
I do not. Thank you for that overview, Dr. Seideman. Moving on to the second agenda item in this section, Dr. Joshua Smith received the doctoral degree in school psychology from Argosy University in June of 2018. This is actually a reapplication number 2. It was approved by the board in October of 2022. And at that time, that reapplication allowed to take the ECCC, and they were not able to test in the time allotted. It looks like this is ECCC attempts have happened twice before, once in 2019 and again in 2020. Both of those attempts, unfortunately, did not meet the specified pass points for Arizona. So this is a request to retake the exam again, hopefully with lots of good luck and success. I saw in the file 2 updated references and an updated self-query. So those appear to be all within date order. There was no concerns in the answer of any of the questions that I saw. Dr. Seideman, did you see any issues with Dr. Smith's request for ECCC only?
No, I have no concerns. It looks like the application is in order.
Perfect. Would you move on to A3, please?
Sure. Dr. Acevedo Molina graduated with a PhD in clinical psychology from the APA-accredited program at University of Arizona, and her degree was conferred on August 19th of 2023. Dr. Acevedo Molina submitted a total of 1,936 hours of pre-doctoral internship from the APA-accredited VA Boston Healthcare System, which they participated in August 1st of 2022 and completed July 28th of 2023. Dr. Acevedo Molina submitted a National Practitioner Databank self-query, which was processed on July 2nd of 2024 with no reports. Responses to the declaration questions revealed no concerns, and references appeared to be in order. I don't have any concerns with this application, Dr. Flint. Do you?
I agree. I did not see anything that I had questions about. Thank you, Dr. Seideman.
You're welcome.
The last one in this section requesting approval for ECCC only is number 4, Dr. Lindsay Polk. Lindsay graduated with a degree in clinical psychology from APA-accredited Midwestern University in Glendale in August of 2023. She was initially approved to sit for the exam in January 2024. She is requesting at this time a retake of that ECCC after not obtaining the passing scaled score when she attempted that test in October of 2024. All of our previous hours had been already reviewed prior to the first attempt, so I won't go through those verbally now, but her previous two references are still within date range and were affirmative towards licensure and are upon moving forward through this process. And an updated self-query form was submitted, again, in date range. I didn't see any other concerns with any answers to the questions or any reason to not consider her to be, move forward with another attempt. Dr. Seidman, what did you think about this application?
I don't have any concerns. Looks in order, Dr. Flynn.
Okay. So for Section A, I would like to make a motion for Dr. Lipton, Smith, Acevedo, Molina, and Polk to all be forwarded with our recommendation that they be approved to sit for the ECPP only. Do I hear a second?
I second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And with all parties answering, we will move forward to Section B. This is requesting approval to sit for the ECPP and licensure. Dr. Seidman, would you take B1, please?
Yes. Dr. Dominique Doss had their initial application approved by the board on October 15th of 2018. And the board also approved three extensions to take the ECPP. Two were in 2020 and one was in 2021. Dr. Doss took the ECPP on April 5th of 2021 and unfortunately did not receive a scaled score that was above the threshold for licensure in Arizona. The board then approved a reapplication on March 11th of 2022. Dr. Doss asked for two extensions to take the ECPP. And then Dr. Doss finally took the exam on March 4th of 2024, and unfortunately, again, didn't receive a passing scaled score. Dr. Doss is now asking to take the exam again and is requesting accommodations, specifically double the exam time. A National Practitioner Data Bank self-query was processed on July 21st of 2024 with no reports. Everything else seems to be in order. I don't see any problem with the double the exam time, Dr. Flint. I think everything is in order, unless you have some concern.
No, I agree. There was the affiliated documentation for that request, so I feel okay in passing that forward, that request. And with wishes for great success, this has been a long journey for Dr. Doss. So, excellent. We'll move on to the second one in this category, Dr. Kendra Jacques. I hope that I pronounced that correct. She obtained her PhD in clinical psychology from APA accredited Fuller Theological Seminary in December of 2022. She is also requesting, as part of this application, accommodations, frequent breaks in a separate testing room. And I will need to ask my esteemed colleagues here, the separate testing room is something that is something that can be done as far as the testing centers? Yes? Okay, see, yes. So, sorry, Kathy, go ahead.
Yes, Madam Chair. Also, in the resources folder, in the meeting folder, if you open that, you'll see ECPP accommodations list from ASPPB. So you can check that against their list as well.
Perfect. All these resources. Thank you for pointing that out. So clearly this is possible. So the request would be frequent breaks in a separate testing room. As far as the hours verification, she submitted 2,179 hours of pre-internship hours across three different sites, Rancho Los Amigos Rehab Center, City of Hope, and Cedars-Sinai. I do have a question, Dr. Seidman, and I don't know whether you picked up on this and can give some insight. In the forms for Rancho Los Amigos, it said that there were modifications due to the pandemic, but I didn't see anywhere where those modifications were listed what they were. And that could impact hours, I'm assuming, if depending on what the modifications were. So I do have a question about that one. Going forward to internship verification, Northern Arizona VA Healthcare for 2,080 hours. Just another, again, side question. It looked like about 35 of those hours were claimed as program, academic program for dissertation, and not, in fact, for the internship. So if we subtract those 35 hours from the 2080, we still have sufficient hours at 2045. But I did want to just reference that. Yep. There are two references and a self-query. My inclination is to ask, do a fair letter on this one and ask for what the modifications were specifically at the pre-internship level at Rancho Los Amigos Rehab Center. Dr. Seidman, is that, would you be okay with that recommendation, or do you have something else in mind?
No, I was going to mention that as well. I think it would be an easy response to a fair if they could just describe what those accommodations were due to COVID, and hopefully that'll be fine.
Madam Chair, committee members.
Yes.
Notice I see on that verification that does say see attachment. So it makes me wonder, did I miss an attachment in putting the file together? So if you want to just wait on this one a little bit while I do a quick look at the file and see.
Yes.
We may not need the fair. So
that'd be great. Thank you, Kathy.
All right.
Thanks. Totally agree with that. Okay. As far as presentation and other issues, that was the only outstanding thing for me. So we will wait to see if Kathy comes up with the attachment, and we could do a quick review of that and get it through instead of waiting for a fair response. If we need a fair response, we'll ask for that. So let's move on to B3, Dr. Seidman.
Yes. Thank you, Dr. Flint. This is Dr. Belt's reapplication. And Dr. Belt's initial application was approved by the board on May 3rd of 2024. Dr. Belt took the ERPP on September 30th of 2024 and unfortunately received a scale score below the required point threshold for licensure in Arizona. Dr. Belt graduated with a PhD in clinical psychology from the APA-accredited Fielding Graduate University in August of 2023. Dr. Belt submitted a total of 2,080 hours of predoctoral internship from the Northern Arizona VA, and an additional 2,053 hours of pre-internship clinical experience. And all of the supervision hours and direct hours appear to be in order, and the training plans appear adequate. Dr. Belt submitted an updated National Practitioner Databank self-query, which was processed on September 30th of 2024, with no reports. Dr. Belt included documentation of licensure in Tennessee as a social worker and in Texas. Both of those are inactive, and as a certified social worker in Missouri, which is active and not encumbered. Responses to declaration questions revealed no concerns, and references appear to still be in order. I don't have any concerns with this application, Dr. Flint, unless you do.
Agree. Thank you for that presentation on that application file.
You're welcome.
The next one in this section, also requesting sit for ERPP and licensure, is number 4. Dr. Michelle O.Z. Williams obtained a degree in clinical psychology from APA-accredited Alliant International University. This is a reapplication. She was first authorized to sit in June of 2024. Unfortunately, didn't obtain the scaled score passing on attempt number 1, which was undertaken in July of 2024. All the hours were previously reviewed in order to sit for that initial exam, so I will not recover those here. She did submit a new self-query. References were still valid from the initial application and within time frame. There were no concerns that I saw in any of the answers to the questions. And so I didn't have any other questions in particular about this application. Dr. Seidman, did you find anything else that I might have missed or overlooked?
No, I have no concerns, Dr. Flint.
Okay. If you would take number 5, please, sir.
I sure will. And it appears that Dr. Brandon McCormick is here. Thanks for being here,
Great.
Dr. McCormick.
Thank you so much.
Dr. McCormick graduated with a PhD in clinical psychology from the APA-accredited University of Alabama. August 3rd of 2024. Dr. McCormick submitted a total of 2,055 hours of predoctoral internship, which was done at the APA-accredited Federal Correctional Institute, Inglewood. That was completed August 9th of 2024. And Dr. McCormick also submitted an additional 918 hours of supervised predoctoral internship clinical experience with over 400 client contact hours and 65 hours of supervision. The training plans appeared in order for these practicum experiences. And Dr. McCormick also submitted 272 total hours of postdoctoral supervised clinical experience, which was also completed at the Federal Correctional Institute Inglewood, which had 19 and a half supervision hours and 110 direct hours. Dr. McCormick submitted a National Practitioner Databank self-query, which was processed on August 15th of 2024 with no reports. Letters of reference appeared to be in order. Responses to declaration questions revealed no concerns. This application looks good, Dr. Flint, unless you have some concerns.
Agree. I agree with that assessment. The last one in this category is B6, Dr. Battles. Can I ask our team to pull up this file? Because I did have a couple of questions on this one, and I just want to make sure I'm not missing anything that should be more apparent than it felt when I was reviewing the file. So Dr. Battles obtained their degree in counseling psychology from APA-accredited University of Missouri, Columbia. There were lots of different site and information submitted, but I did notice that on many of them, the time to track summary, which was also submitted, didn't necessarily meet up with the hours that were posted. So for example, pre-internship verification, Westminster College Wellness Center, on the time to track summary, the site was listed as having only 3 hours with a psychologist in being the supervisor. And that was on page 32 of 58 of our file. So I'm not sure what we do when there's such a discrepancy of so few hours done by the licensed psychologist. May I ask board staff for any guidance on that particular issue?
Can I chime in just for a sec?
Yes, please.
Dr. Flint, unless I need new glasses,
it's probably me.
Could be the case. It looks like there are 3 hours done in individual supervision for this particular time to track. We don't usually get time to track
right.
forms, do we?
Right. No, we don't.
And so I wonder if this isn't the complete time to track.
That there might have been more hours listed. The 68 hours, 88 hours, 60 says it was group and 25 said it was individual with a licensed allied mental health professional. And that's kind of what gained my attention, that why was there only 3 hours of this with an actual licensed psychologist in the individual side?
Yes. Now, I don't know if this is possible.
Mm-hmm.
Just give me one sec here.
Yep. Any ideas you have are welcome.
I'm trying. It looks like there was somebody who died. Right above there.
Mm-hmm.
Christy Hutton signed this on behalf of Dr. Boggs, who's deceased.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that has anything to do with it. It looks like Ms. Stevens, who's an LCS. Oh, wait, hold on. There is a Dr. Lacey, who was a psychologist on site.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see above?
Yeah, but not listed as doing any of the supervision or maybe provided those 3 hours. I'm not sure.
Correct. And as you know, in time to track, you can only have one supervisor at a time.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if that's an issue, that it's the time to track.
In situations like this, Kathy, with time to track, has there been discrepancies noted before?
Madam Chair, committee members, I am not. As you noted, we hardly ever see time to track.
Right.
So I have no experience to speak to it. All I can speak to is that the statute 32-2071 subsection E, is it 4D, says that At least 75% of the supervision shall be by a psychologist who is licensed or certified to practice psychology at the independent level in the US or Canada. And no, not more than 25% of the supervision shall be by a licensed mental health professional who is licensed or certified in the US or Canada. A psychology intern currently under supervision of a licensed psychologist, or an individual completing a postdoc under the supervision of a licensed psychologist. So 25% is the maximum for a mental health professional who is not a psychologist.
Yes.
It looks like we have maybe more than that if I'm doing my Common Core math correctly.
Yeah, and that's it would be up to the committee if they wished to have more information about this to issue a fair letter and request that additional information.
Go ahead, Dr. Seben.
Well, I was just thinking, Dr. Flint, the site.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at the verification form and I would imagine a psychologist does sign off on this and list them as a primary supervisor and then the social worker as a secondary supervisor. Again, I wonder if it's a time to track issue.
A time to track issue. Yeah, it could be. It absolutely could be. Does it make you uncomfortable not asking those questions, or are you okay with moving forward just what's on the verification form?
Well, let me just look at my notes for a sec here, if you don't mind.
Because there's a couple of other things that leads me to think we might need to do a fair letter on some of these others, but they really were triggered by a lot of the information provided on those time to track forms, which we normally don't see.
Yeah, I'll support, if you have any concerns at all, Dr. Flint, I'll support having a fair letter sent about to clarify that.
So, Kathy, if you can just take note of that issue on the Westminster College Wellness Center one. Then if we go down to the True North of Columbia, where they're claiming total hours of 336, direct hours of 73, and one-to-one of 36, the primary supervisor there is listed as an LCSW. So I don't believe that those can count. I wrote down page 26 of 58 in our documents, if anybody wants to take a peek at that and just make sure that I haven't completely read it inaccurately. So I'd also request clarification of who was the primary supervisor at that site.
Dr. Flint, I'm sorry, which site are you talking about? Right now?
The True North of Columbia site.
Okay. In their practicum training plan.
Uh-huh.
Oh God, my, it talks about licensed psychologists providing 2.5 hours of group supervision
mm-hmm.
per month, which is really low.
Yeah.
So that would support what you're highlighting here.
Yeah. So let's write down just a note of clarification on that as well. Sorry, I'm flipping between screens and I'm losing the video screen consistently. I apologize to everybody listening and watching. Then on University of Missouri Columbia Counseling Center, again, we have on page 40 of 58, most of that supervision appears to have been provided by an other, and it's listed as peer-to-peer supervision. So I'm assuming that's meta supervision of an intern under supervision of their doctoral supervisor. But again, that skews those hours of what this individual student needed for their training. So I'd like to request, unless I've misread that in any way, I would like to request clarification on that site as well. Dr. Seidman, do you see that same issue? Or?
Yeah, I sure do. And peer-to-peer is in supervision, as we know.
Yeah, and it's counted on the time track, and it appears, yeah. So,
but not for our statute.
We need some clarification there about what actually happened. And then unfortunately, another question on the University of Missouri Columbia Wellness Resource Center hours. On the time to track form, it lists 1,293 hours, 555 being direct, 91.5 in supervision. But then we only have 327 accounted for. I initially thought it was meant to add up to the 1500, which sometimes we see just claiming only 1500, but it doesn't add up to that with the counted hours, or we're still at 1344.
Yeah.
So I was questioning the inconsistency there, how many hours were actually accrued at that site, and what were all the parameters of direct and supervision, and who provided the supervision there. I'd like clarification for. Yes. So unfortunately, we're looking at questions on each of the pre-internship sites. The internship of this individual was at ASU Counseling Services, 2000 hours, they're APA accredited. I didn't have any questions on that, but definitely since we're counting pre-internship time, we need to get some answers on what happened in those supervision, and if the time to track was inaccurate, perhaps not submitting the time to track, just submitting the verification hours. Mm-hmm. There were two references and a self-query that were all within time parameters on this individual application. I'm trying to see if there's any other hidden notes here as I'm looking at my other screen. I wouldn't feel comfortable moving forward on this approval unless we get some answers on those pre-internship hours. Dr. Seidman, your thoughts?
I agree, Dr. Flint. It's not clear that the application meets a state statute for licensure.
Okay. Is Dr. Battles by chance on the phone? Unfortunately, for those who are calling in, the only thing that shows is your phone number, and I don't know your numbers. So if Dr. Battles is here and can shed any light on this, please raise your hand. Dr. Packinen, and I just gave you a huge raise. Ms. Packinen, please proceed. You're on mute, ma'am.
Apologize. Thank you. I was going to suggest that within the FAIR letter that you also include an explicit invitation for the applicant to appear. I don't know that a subpoena is necessary. That's typically reserved, you know, in instances where, you know, there's some indication of reticence to come before a committee or a board. So I think, though, by articulating it in the FAIR letter, I think that's going to help you gain clarity. If he had been present today, you know, maybe some of your questions would have been answered. So I'm making that suggestion, and I see that that's you're concurring that he be expressly advised to attend.
Absolutely. Dr. Simon, do you agree
Absolutely.
With that? Okay.
I agree.
Did you suggestion. Have any other concerns on this particular application, the last one in that section?
No.
We covered it all. Okay. So let's go back, Kathy, just in essence of making a motion on the whole section, were you able to find any additional information on item number B2?
Yes, Kendra Jacques, if you open that PDF, if you haven't already got it open, on page 32, there is an explanation of how the COVID-19 pandemic affected Kendra Jacques' final year of pre-internship training. And it's signed by the DCT at her college.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you. We're quickly reviewing it here. Hold on, everybody, just for one moment. Seems pretty standard to what happened at other sites during that time. Do you have
sure.
any concerns with that explanation, Dr.
No, they continue to get weekly supervision, provided care via telehealth. It sounds great. Yeah, thank you.
All right. That avoids a FAIR letter. Thank you, Kathy, for pointing us in that direction. All right, so I'm going to attempt to make the motion for this section. We are going to forward for approval applications of Dr. Doss with the request for accommodation, Dr. Jackace, Dr. Belt, Dr. OZ Williams, and Dr. McCormick. We are going to ask for a FAIR letter to go out to the last applicant in this section, Dr. Battles, on the pre-internship four sites. There's questions on all four sites, and we would like to include the express invitation to appear in case there are continuing questions in order to just facilitate getting those answers more quickly. Do I hear a second to that motion?
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Thank you for your help working through that section. I knew we were going to have a couple of questions there. Our next section for a review are requesting approval for licensure by waiver. Item number one had been moved to the board agenda, just to note that. Items two and three, Estrada and Duran. Dr. Estrada, I see you present. Thank you very much. I don't see Dr. Duran. Welcome to the meeting. Let's move down. And if you would take the first one, Dr. Seidman, Dr. Campbell, please. Oh, wait, that one moved. Sorry, Dr. Estrada.
I sure will. Thanks for being here today, Dr. Estrada. Dr. Estrada has passed part one of the EPPP and is not licensed as a psychologist. Dr. Estrada passed the EPPP on June 6th of 2024 with a score above the threshold for licensure in Arizona. Dr. Estrada earned a PsyD from the AP accredited Chicago School of Professional Psychology in September of 2021. Dr. Estrada submitted 2,036 hours of predoctoral internship, which was completed at the APA-accredited Utah State Hospital, and completed that in June of 2021. Dr. Estrada submitted postdoctoral hours, 2,015 total hours, with 1,048 direct and 100 hours of supervision completed at the Utah State Hospital. A national practitioner databank self-query was processed in June of 2024 with no reports. Letters of reference appear in order. Declaration questions revealed no concerns. I don't have any concerns with this application, Dr. Flint, unless you do.
I just have a couple questions, and they might be more just technical questions for staff available. When I do the math, again, math not being my strong suit, so I want to double check on this. Technically, 100.75 hours are needed in one-to-one supervision. Is there a need to be 0.75 critical? What has been the historical? I want to be accurate, and that would be, by my calculations, 100.75, which seems really silly, but here we are. Yes. The math is just math. I have another question on this. The transcript, and maybe, Doctor, you can chime in on this. Your transcript states that you were awarded that cleared and awarded the degree on 9/30/21, but you started your postdoc prior to the doctoral degree being conferred. You started in August of 2021. Can you, Dr. Estrada, give me any information about that? And I'm assuming that we cannot count those hours toward your verification because you weren't technically postdoc until you had your degree.
Correct. It was based on what the state hospital had just kind of switched me over. So the actual postdoctoral hours wouldn't start until my degree was confirmed.
Okay, but it appears the verification form, the dates then would be discrepant. So I think we do need to get that updated and clarified what actual hours were accrued from 9/30/21 through 7/29/22. Dr. Seidman, would that be your take on the situation?
Yeah. So, Dr. Estrada, are you including those hours pre degree in your documents?
I was not. It's just the state hospital had identified my position at that time because I had already finished the internship. But the hours, no, I'm not counting that.
And
So Dr. Flint, are you suggesting that the dates just changed on the verification form? Is that what you're suggesting?
If it's accurate that those hours didn't in fact happen before, and that's what the person is signing off on, I assume it's the director of clinical training. I've lost my file here and all the screen switches. A quick verification that those hours were not included pre 9/30. I would be fine with just obtaining that verification. Kathy, is that fair to do? And then go ahead and move it forward if that is in fact what the verification form was meant to say.
Yes, that you may. We could. I always think of them as informal requests.
Perfect.
And aren't as restricted in time.
Great.
We can, if we receive it, the board meeting is November 8th. If we receive it by November, Monday or Tuesday before, we are. Should be fine with putting it on the agenda.
Okay, Dr. Seidman, are you okay with making that just an informal
Absolutely.
request? And
Absolutely.
if we can also just ask for technically 100.75 hours of that supervision is needed, if they can just review the documentation. Hopefully there's 0.75 somewhere just so that we're our math is adding up here. That would be helpful. All right.
Dr. Estrada, does that sound reasonable and easy to do?
Yes.
Great.
Perfect. Thank you for being here. This really just clarifies the process and helps us make decisions that are expeditious on your behalf. So thank you, Dr. Estrada, for taking the time to do that. Any other concerns at all from you, Dr. Seidman, about that? So we'll just do
No.
that informal request.
That's
The
great.
second person in this category, Dr. Duran, received their doctoral degree in clinical psychology from APA-accredited Kent State University in August of 2014. She is licensed in the state of Texas since 2017, not expiring until 9 of 26, with no actions noted. I don't see Dr. Duran on the call unless you are on the phone. Internship hours, Baylor College of Medicine, Texas Children's Hospital, from 7/13 to 6/14, APA accredited 2,000 hours. That form was interestingly filled out. It said 2,000 plus hours, which is a tiny bit inaccurate. I'm not going to stop the process based on that, but just in case anybody is on the call, 2,000 plus is probably not the best way to put those hours in. The actual accurate amount of hours would be requested on that, but since we know it's an APA accredited site, there's likely was more than 2,000, but please fill out the forms with that in mind. Postdoc verification, again, Baylor College of Medicine, Texas Children's Hospital was completed by 2016. That looks like it was a 2-year postdoc, 4,000 hours. All the direct hours and one-to-one supervised hours, according to my math at least, appear to work out as required by a rule. Two references were submitted, a self-query was submitted, all within date range with no concerns on that. Dr. Seidman, did you have anything on Dr. Duran's application that I might have missed or misadded in any way?
No. I'm a psychologist too, so my math is shaky too, but I double checked and you're correct. So we're good. That
Perfect.
application looks in order.
Excellent. So, in manner of a motion for Section E, I would like to move Dr. Estrada and Duran to approval but for licensure by waiver in. For the board, with the tiny caveat on Dr. Estrada's that informal request to match up the dates and look for that 0.75 of extra one-to-one supervision so that all of our math adds up. Do I hear a second to that motion?
I second that motion, Dr. Flint.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Perfect. That was kind of a loosey-goosey motion, Kathy. I hope you can make sense of what was said there. All right. Section F. Requesting of, oh, did you have something to add?
Just my thought, Madam Chair, committee members, on Dr. Estrada's, because her verification was, I'm just trying to put it into words. Because it was for over 2,000 hours, the board can only accept 1,500 hours. And so
That's a good point.
I think once, you know, when they, once they change the dates and look at the hours for those dates, I think that it's not really going to matter because they're so close to enough supervision. I think once they look at it and select even just a subsection, you know, from that September 30th to whatever, it's probably going to be fine.
Thank you for bringing that forward. That is an excellent point. I often forget that only 1,500 can count, so thank you for that clarification. All right, Section F on our agenda today is quite a large section requesting approval for licensure by credential, and it looks like we have Dr. Whitaker, Dr. Gretchen Dorley, and Dr. Soenberg, if I said that correctly. Is there anybody else here from that section? Doesn't look like it from my count. Dr. Seidman, would you begin with the first one in this category?
I sure will. So Dr. Shannon Curry is applying for licensure by credential. Dr. Curry holds a national register as a health service psychologist, was credentialed June 12th of 2024, is licensed in the state of California since July of 2014 and in Hawaii since July of 2013, and both licenses are in good standing. The ECCC score was above the Arizona required scaled score. National Practitioner Data Bank self-query was generated June 12th of 2024 with no reports. And Dr. Curry answered no on the professional conduct questions. This application looks in order to me with no concerns, Dr. Flint, unless you have a concern.
I agree. Thank you very much for that review.
You're welcome.
The next one in this section is Dr. Ashley Whitaker, graduated from Alliant International University in August of 2014. Holds a double board certification in clinical neuropsychology and pediatric clinical neuropsychology. Congratulations on that achievement. She's licensed in California and has been since May 2016 with no actions. She was licensed in Pennsylvania prior to that, again, with no actions. Mm-hmm. A self-query form was submitted. And from my checklist, it looks like this application appears to be in order. Dr. Seidman, did you have any additions or concerns?
No, this application looks quite in order.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Dr. Whitaker, for being present. The next one, Dr. Seidman.
This is Dr. Morgan Pepitone, who holds a CPQ, which was issued August 29th of 2024. Dr. Pepitone has an active full independent license in California since 2009. National Practitioner Data Bank self-query was processed of 9-6 of 2024 with no reports. And Dr. Pepitone answered no to the professional conduct questions. I don't have any concerns for this particular application.
I agree, Dr. Seidman. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
F4, Dr. Denise Gretchen Dorley, graduated from Fordham University in May of 2005. She's licensed in California with no actions. She is a national register holder. Her ECCC score was verified. Self-query form was received with no concerns listed on that. Answered the professional conduct questions in full with no concerns that I saw there. Dr. Seidman, do you have any concerns about Dr. Gretchen Dorley's application?
I don't. It looks like it's in order.
Excellent. Would you please take F5? And thank you, Dr. Gretchen Dorley, for being here today. Would you take number five, sir?
I sure will. And I see Dr. Schoenberg is here. I hope I'm saying that correctly. Thanks for being here, Dr. Schoenberg. Dr. Schoenberg holds an ABEP credential in behavioral and cognitive psychology and has done so since 2011. Dr. Schoenberg has an active full independent license in Virginia since 2022. Is also licensed in Pennsylvania since 1995, and both are active and in good standing. National Practitioner Data Bank self-query had no reports. It was generated September 20th of 2024. Dr. Schoenberg answered no to the professional conduct questions, and I had one minor kind of obsessive compulsive comment on this application. On question number one, have they taken the ECCC? The response was no. And I was a little bit taken aback by that, but I think it probably is just a typo. So with that said, I don't have any concerns beyond the typo, unless I'm seeing that the wrong way, Dr. Flynn.
I'm pulling up the file really quickly because I did not catch that.
Let me clarify. Let me make sure of that, okay? Yeah, the question number one on page four, yeah, says taken the ECCC. It says no.
And we don't need the ECCC score verification in this category, correct, Kathy? But clearly to get licensed in another state, you would have to have passed the test.
Correct. Right. And Madam Chair, committee members, ABEP, they verify the ECCC score before they issue the credential.
Okay. So we can be assured that it was potentially...
It serves as proof of having passed the ECCC.
Okay. Excellent.
So it's just a typo.
Just a typo or oversight. Dr. Schoenberg, did you have anything to add about that or any other, likely just a typo of maybe a trauma response from taking the, I'm just kidding. Okay. Well, must not have anything to add there.
All right.
With that explanation of the verification, I think we're fine moving forward. I don't have any other concerns in that application.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Pond.
Dr. Schoenberg, thank you for being here. Dr. Fisher is number 6 in this section. Jennifer Fisher graduated from Arizona State University in December of 1996, holds a diplomat in clinical child and adolescent, is licensed in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Florida, all with no actions, Minnesota was formally licensed with no actions, I apologize. And she is also a CIPAC participant. Self-query was received with no issues there. There were answers of no to the professional conduct questions. I didn't see anything in this application that needed further query. Dr. Seidman, did you?
No, I have no concerns with that application.
Excellent. All right. So would you take the last one in this section, Dr. Gross, please?
I sure will.
Gosspower, sorry. I can't
Dr.
read.
Dr. Gosspower, right?
Yes.
Dr. Gosspower is registered with the National Register as a health service psychologist. Obtained that credential in August of 2024 and has been licensed in New Hampshire since 2008. The ECCC score, which was taken in New Hampshire, was above the Arizona required scaled score, and that was passed in 2008 as well. National Practitioner Databank self-query was generated on September 7th of 2024 with no reports. Dr. Gosspower answered no on the professional conduct questions. I don't have any concerns with this application. Dr. Flint, do you?
I agree with you. Thank you very much for that review.
You're welcome.
In matter of a motion on section F, which is request for approval for licensure by credential, I would like to forward Dr. Curry, Whitaker, Pepperton, Gretchen Dorley, Schoenberg, Fisher, and Gosspower all forward to the board with a recommendation of approval. Do I hear
second.
A second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Thank you, everyone, for being here from that section. I appreciate your application to Arizona and welcome to, after the board, of course, welcome to practice. The next section, section G, requesting approval for licensure by universal recognition. I do see one applicant from this section, and unfortunately, he's way down at the end. So with your permission, Dr. Seidman, may we move Dr. Cudler up and review him first, just for ease of him exiting if he so chooses?
I think it's a great idea.
Perfect. Would you start out with number 7, please?
Sure. So Dr. Steve Cudler, is it? Dr. Cudler? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
We'll go with it.
Maybe not. I'll just go along with it. So Dr. Cudler has an active full independent license in California and has been licensed since 2005 with no actions to the license. I think Dr. Cudler's unmuted. Dr. Cudler, am I pronouncing your name correctly? Oops, that was hopeful. Okay. Dr. Cudler has proof of established residence in Arizona, submitted proof of Arizona residence, has a doctoral degree from Ryokan College obtained in 2003. National Practitioner Databank self-query was generated June 5th of 2024 with no reports. Answered professional conduct questions with no. But interestingly enough, submitted a case that was dismissed back in the 1990s. So I'm guessing that was just an oversight on the no professional conduct question. Other than that, I have no concerns, Dr. Flint.
Madam Chair, Dr. Seidman, I wanted to point out, after Dr. Cudler had submitted his application, he notified me that he had incorrectly answered one of the declaration questions and submitted a letter on page 5 of the file, an explanation of what the charges were, how long ago it was.
Yes.
A long time ago.
Yes.
And then submitted documentation as you know, appropriately as we request. So that's what that was.
Yes, thanks, Kathy. I was just noting the answer to the question, but I'm happy with the explanation and that. So no concern.
I do have a question, just more of getting to know the process from our board staff on this one. The proof of residency that was given appears to be a document that just talks about like land ownership. And I thought, can that be used as an address? Because I can own land anywhere and not have residency there. I just thought that wasn't, we normally don't see those. So I just wanted to ask the question just for my own knowledge base. As we move forward, that's an appropriate document of residency, establishes residency.
The board's substantive policy statement lists 11 options, but it also says may include, but is not limited to. So it is up to the committee if they think that this is sufficient proof of residence.
Kathy, can you hear me?
Yes, Dr. Cudler.
Hi. Sorry, I was muted before. Yes, Dr. Seidman, that was my correct pronunciation. Thanks again.
Great.
Yes, I have an Arizona driver's license with my home address I can forward to Kathy. But that I bought this home like 4 or 5 months ago, back in June. I moved in. So I'm in the home right now in Bullhead City. And but my Arizona driver's license that I obtained when I moved here does show this address.
Excellent. Thank you for that clarification, Dr. Cudler. With that information, I just thought that was normally a document that I haven't seen, so I wanted to just clarify. I feel comfortable moving forward. Dr. Seidman, do you have any issues with the warranty deed as submitted?
No, I just assumed we're in the Wild West so people can camp out on land. You know.
Awesome. I have a feeling he's a little more established than that. Thank you, Dr. Cudler, for being here. We will now move up to number one in that section. I just wanted to give Dr. Cudler the option of bowing out if we didn't have any other questions of him. So I will present Dr. Bethany Friedman, graduated from Alliant International University in June of 2013. She's licensed in California and in New York with no actions, submitted a self-query form. Residency was verified through both a lease and child school enrollment. I didn't see anything that caught attention or concern in this file, Dr. Seidman, did you?
Nope.
Perfect. If you would take G2, sir.
I sure will. I just need to get my stuff together here. So just hang with me for a second.
Too many screens open. That's what's happening on my end, too.
Yes. Sorry about that. This is Dr. Long.
Correct.
And Dr. Long is licensed in Florida since June of 2024, in Ohio since 2022. Both are active with no disciplinary action. She's also part of SciPac, which is active, submitted a National Practitioner Data Bank self-query in August of 2024 with no reports. I don't see any. Oh, and residency was verified. I don't see any concerns about this particular application.
I agree with you, Dr. Seidman. The next one in this section, Dr. Norris Walczak, I hope I pronounced that correctly, graduated from Pacifica Graduate University in July of 2011. She's currently licensed in California, but only for 3 more days. I don't know if that matters in our process, but as of today, she appears to be licensed, and there were no actions at all that were noted on the file. Did submit the self-query. The residency was verified through a close of escrow letter. It appears that other than that little 3-day thing, which I don't think is a concern because as of today, she's licensed. I don't have any concerns about this application. Dr. Seidman, what do you think?
Well, here's my obsessive compulsiveness coming.
Please.
Back. Sorry about that. But on that question one on the declarations, they answered no to license in any jurisdiction. So again, I think that's just an oversight.
Right. but a testament's coming up frequently enough that attention to those details when applying is very, very important. I completely agree with that critical nature of looking through the application. Is that something with the verification of the licensure that we have further down in the packet? You're okay with that? Just
I am. Okay. Are you, Dr.
Fink? I agree. Yeah, no, I'm fine with that. Just again, a kind of a plea for applicants to really take their time as they're going through the process so that those little questions don't even need to come up.
Yeah, it's just a conflicting information that we get.
Yep, it is for sure. All right. So that takes care of G3. G4, Dr. Fields, would you take that one?
Yes. Dr. Annabelle Fields has an active full independent license in California and has been licensed there since June of 2016 with no actions, had submitted proof of established residence in Arizona, has a doctoral degree in clinical psychology from Widener University since 2008. National Practitioner Databank self-query was generated in August of 2024, on the 20th of 2024, with no reports and answered no to the professional conduct questions. I don't have any concerns with this application. Do you, Dr. Flint?
Nor do I. Thank you for that presentation. Yeah. G5 is Dr. Amina Simmons. Dr. Simmons graduated from the University of Miami in December 2019. She's a national register holder. She's licensed in Utah with no actions noted. Residency was verified via a driver's license. A self query was submitted, and the professional conduct questions were answered no's. I didn't see anything on this file that made me question or had any follow-up. Dr. Seidman, did you?
No.
Perfect. G6, Dr. Stanton, would you do that presentation, please, sir?
Sure. Dr. Stanton has a full independent license in California since October 18th of 2019 with no actions. Submitted proof of established residency in Arizona. Doctoral degree is from the Southern California Seminary, which was obtained in 2014. National Practitioner Databank self-query was generated June 25th of 2024 with no reports. Dr. Stanton answered no to on all the professional conduct questions. Once again, that question number one, license in any jurisdiction, answered no, but that's, again, we have proof of the licensure. So I don't have any concerns with that application. Do you, Dr.?
It's interesting that so many of them had the same similar error throughout them. That is just something to pay attention to. Thank you for picking that up on that.
Sure.
So we've reviewed all seven in this category. So I'd like to make a motion to forward to the board approval for licensure via universal recognition on Drs. Friedman, Long, Norris, Welzak, Fields, Simmons, Stanton, and Cudler. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Motion carries. Our last section for today is approval for telehealth registry. We have two applicants in this section. Would you go ahead and take H1, please?
Sure. This is Dr. Bautista Bahal. I hope I didn't mess up the name. Dr. Bahal provided information in the state of California. Has proof of an Arizona statutory agent, which is dated on August 27th of 2024. Submitted a National Practitioner Databank self-query, which was processed July 12th of 2024 with no reports. Provided written certification that the applicant has read the statutes and rules. Also provided written certification that the applicant understands that they must provide an annual report to the board, to board staff. And has no disciplinary actions against the license in California, which was issued in November 15th of 2016. I don't have any concerns of this particular applicant, Dr. Flint. Do you?
I agree. Thank you for that presentation.
You're welcome.
The second one in this category, Dr. Jessica Brooks, is licensed in Wisconsin, New York, and Texas with no actions noted. There's proof of liability insurance, proof of the statutory agent, a self-query. All the mandatory attestations were received. I didn't see anything in this application that was of concern or that I had questions on. Dr. Seidman, do you?
No concerns.
Perfect. All right. So with that, I will motion that we forward to the board approval for telehealth registry for the two applicants listed on the agenda, Dr. Bautista Bohal and Dr. Brooks. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Do we have any new agenda items for future meetings that we'd like to bring up?
I don't.
I have one. I'm so sorry. Kathy, you're going to giggle at me. Having my office directly across from the director of clinical training allows her to tell me about snafus in our forms. And the forms that we just changed about recording of hours, it seems to be causing a great deal of confusion. I will forward you an example of what's happening. And I don't know whether we just want to tweak the wording a little bit, but we're just finding that the same error is now being repeated because they're not understanding exactly what we were asking for. So I will forward that to you, Kathy, for a future agenda. Anything else that you thought of while I was putting all that out there? Okay. Dr. Seidman, I will give you the honor of the very last motion of the day, if you'd like, sir.
Oh, wow. Thank you, Dr. Flint. I motion to end our meeting of the Application Review Committee on October 28th of 2024 at 3:02 p.m. Do I hear a second?
Enthusiastic second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you all for your time. Thank you to those who attended, Kathy and Heidi. Of course, your work behind the scenes is recognized and appreciated. And we'll see you next time we have a meeting.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Thank
everyone.
You.
Thank Bye. You.